Off the ball
on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
So we've got Keith Wood on the line. We've got Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent on the line. We'll start with the big news, lads. Obviously, it's that France will be hosting the 2023 Rugby World Cup. This despite South Africa winning the review, the independent review. So Ireland secured 8 votes in the first round of voting in comparison to 18 for France. And then South Africa had 13. And then we went into round 2 and France won comfortably enough in the end, 24 to South Africa's 15. So Philip Brown, firstly, before I get your thoughts on it, the RFU CEO, he was talking about the report issued by the technical review group, which he felt struck a fatal blow.
The evaluation report, when you sit back and look at it, hold us below the waterline. And it was very, it was always going to be very difficult to come back from that, which is the reason why we attacked the evaluation report, because we were unhappy that there were elements of the evaluation report that we felt had not been done to the sort of level that we would have liked. We lost 5.5 points on the evaluation report because despite the fact that we had commitments in relation to doing works to our stadia that and with guarantees from government in relation to financing that, the fact of the matter is we got marked down. So, which is, you know, at the end of the day, we felt that was very harsh. We didn't see those evaluation criteria until the evaluation report was issued. So, there, and you've probably all seen the letter that was written to World Rugby. There were valid questions that needed to be asked and we felt had to be asked. And I suppose to some extent, the fact that you know, one-third of the electorate, only one-third of the electorate actually supported the recommendation would suggest that other people had a similar concern.
It's given that, why do you think France were able to cross the line first and not Ireland?
Who knows? I mean, at the end of the day, the French are a very good outfit. They have a very good bid. And obviously, the money that was being brought to the table by the French bid was greater than either South Africa or Ireland, and that obviously had some impact.
Brian O'Driscoll was also there in Kensington in London this morning for the announcement. He gave Neil Tracy his immediate reaction.
Very disappointed that there's only 8 votes, that we didn't even get in the mix to get into the second round, and ultimately we've comfortably finished 3rd of 3. So congratulations to France. We'll go back, lick our wounds and reassess what happens in the future.
And it's kind of, it's been said by other members of the Oversight Board in the last few minutes, it was particularly disappointing not to get the votes you expected from your Celtic neighbours.
Yeah, well, yeah, we can't be certain, but the feeling is, well, Scotland set out their stall early saying that they were going to go with the money, whoever was offering the most money, and then Wales, you know, more recently felt as though they had to sway with Gareth Davis, who's sits on a Rugby World Cup board, you know, with their decision of South Africa. So to lose, you know, the likelihood to lose both of them, yeah, it's pretty disappointing. But we got the support of England, and we definitely appreciate that. But you know, England alone weren't ever going to get us across the line. Yeah, it's a shame from our perspective. Also, I'm sure South Africa are bitterly disappointed, being the front runners and comfortably finishing 2nd. But we accept the result, and you get on with it.
How disappointing is it that Ireland doesn't have a chance to host a big tournament and show the world what Ireland's all about? And some countries get to host tournaments. Yeah. Again and again and again.
It's our loss, but it's the world's loss too. Trust me, they'll have one hell of a 7-week period if we are ever allowed to host the World Cup. We know we do a phenomenal job. You know, the evaluation report, which definitely appears to be holes in it, you know, did suggest that we're absolutely capable of doing it. But you know, we got to go back and accept the disappointment now. And you know, it's too early to be thinking about future World Cups. For now, we'll just lick our wounds and accept that, you know, at this time, you know, we weren't the choice of the council members.
No, by some distance. Rory, you were there. Was anything else of note said by anybody?
It was along similar lines, Joe. I mean, the South Africans issued a statement saying that the last 2 weeks have been opaque to the process that was kind of going on up until then. it was quite clear that the Irish bid was very disappointed with the lack of support from its allies in Wales, Scotland, and indeed Italy, the other Pro 14 nations, other than, you know, the more long-standing Pro 14 nations. But I think Ireland were pretty, you know, they probably did France a favour by going so strongly after the technical review evaluation, because they probably cast enough doubt. But unfortunately, they when the doubt was cast and the World Rugby Council members cast their votes, that was it was in favour of the money. You know, they followed the money, and I think the message here is that countries of our size are not in the running to host this tournament anymore. That's why we probably went so strong in the bid for it, because it was the tournament that we felt we could host. But it turns out what World Rugby are looking at, you know, it's almost if you can't host a FIFA or UEFA tournament, stay out of the running.
Yeah, Keith, I wonder if suddenly we're concluding that we've missed that 2011 boat that New Zealand got on.
Well, I think that was one of the big calls for New Zealand. And Martin Snedden, who was CEO of Rugby World Cup New Zealand, spent a few days over in Ireland a couple of years ago. And I grilled him on a whole load of those different elements. And their view was that was the last chance and opportunity that they would ever have.
Right.
Because they didn't think they could get to the point of the financial viability going into the future, because things change an awful lot. Now, if we look very, very quickly at what might happen in the next little period of time, well, it's very unlikely that we would go for the one in 2027, because it would have hugely unlikely that Europe and this side of Europe would get another World Cup immediately after the other one. So that's unlikely. And, you know, so then the what we would say are the quaint element of our stadia infrastructure which we could absolutely fill, and we would fill, and it is probably appropriate, I think, for a World Cup, because you don't want to see any empty seats in a World Cup game, and there has been in all the World Cups, and you just don't want to see them. And I think we could cater for that, but it would require a much larger investment on our infrastructure in 10, 15, 20 years' time to try and go and do it. And I don't know that we're ever in that market, really. It's tough. It's a bitter enough one to pill to swallow. And I one comment from Philip Brown. He said that the criteria, they only found out those criteria after the report was done. Mm. Well, that kind of gets rid of the idea of transparency from the start, because they said, well, everybody agreed to it. But it's fine having a conversation and you're agreeing to a sentiment, but unless that sentiment is fully followed, then you don't. So it's, look, I think it's very sad, actually. I had hoped that Ireland would have got into the last two, and in that instance, we'd have a really good chance. I was hoping that it would be Ireland ahead of France, and France would be gone, and I thought we would get the votes to put us ahead of South Africa. And I just felt it was going to be easier to vote for Ireland or France when I was hoping that we would have had the first couple of guys in there. I mean, not having Scotland and Wales vote for us is dreadful, and is really, really difficult to take, because like, we keep talking about, you know, how transparent all these things are, but the countries that are side by side or playing in each other's competition need to try and vote an awful lot with them. That's what happened in the Southern Hemisphere with South Africa and Australia, New Zealand, I'm presuming, voting for South Africa because their big competition depends on the viability of all the countries that are in it. Up here, they had the opportunity to vote for Ireland or France, and they went with Ireland. Yet these are the Celtic League teams. None of them voted for Ireland. So Italy didn't either. And that's not good for us.
Well, Scotland made it very clear from the outset they were voting for whoever would bring in the most money for World Rugby. And that was, I mean, it was a completely financial decision from a Scottish point of view. And Wales have Gareth Davies on the World Cup board, and he wasn't going to go against the...
Well, Bill Beaumont is chair of World Rugby, and England, we think, have voted with Ireland.
Yeah. Well, that's their logic. I'm just giving you their logic.
Yeah.
I hear you. I hear what you're saying. So another interesting aspect of this, I mean, part of the issues, you raised that point about the fact that all the criteria for this independent review weren't necessarily agreed by everybody before the process began. So like a few teething problems here, not least the optics of this whole thing. Now, I see The Guardian saying the member is not bound by the outcome of the technical report, but it will be of great embarrassment to World Rugby that France has prevailed. And then Joel Stransky, who we all remember from his exploits in 95, has said, you can only imagine the lobbying that's gone on behind the scenes. And the one thing that it does fix in my mind is that this is an old boys club still making decisions at World Rugby. And World Rugby will be open to that accusation, regardless of how they might try and spin it the other way, Keith.
Well, you could imagine how much it would be if it had gone to Ireland, exactly. Since World Rugby is based here. It becomes very hard when we're looking at it, because we wouldn't be crying about it if we had got it. And of course we're upset for it because there's a long period of time that's gone in. I still go back to those closest to us in the Six Nations or the Celtic League as it used to be. How has our relationship with them not been as good as it could be? Because we are all in the exact same boat. Four countries who are pretty much in the same boat. We don't have access to the TV monies like England or France. We don't have the populations like England or France. So we somehow have soured our relationship, or it has been soured because they didn't vote for us. And I would say, and I go back a little bit to the idea of whether Ireland could have a good event or not, and we have such a long time to go and deliver the event, and it could be done as a way, and people have been criticizing a lot of the figures that have been discussed in terms of the economic impact into the country. It would have been huge. It could have been of huge benefit. You consolidate a whole variety of different funds that are spent at different times to make certain that a lot of that goes to the exchequer, so that you get out of it, that you get out of it with money in it. The bid company itself and the running company often lose money, but the country makes money and the exchequer does. And actually, if you looked at France's reaction, Laporte's reaction to getting it, they said, look at all the money, the billion pounds that's going to go into the French economy, the 17,000 jobs that this will make. They're very relevant for Ireland. So that's why we would want to go for it, and why it's such a huge pity that we actually don't have it.
Rory, a final point then. You take Keith's point that Martin Sledden made to him a number of years ago about maybe the New Zealand effort being the last chance for a nation of that size to host the event. Philip Brown was certainly very non-committal about any bids in the future, I understand.
Yeah, he was. And my understanding is that Ireland are, you know, if the parameters remain the same, Ireland are very unlikely to go for this again. They spent a lot of time, a decent amount of money on this bid. They've been shaking hands and pressing flesh for 6 years, and it's got them a grand total of 8 votes out of 39, which is, I'd say, unbelievably disheartening as they return back to Dublin tonight. The message has been sent loud and clear that money talks, this kind of the French kind of drawn their support from a kind of a loose conglomeration of international federations and kind of smaller nations, and it's South Africa could count the sands are, and Ireland had the RFU behind them, but the French went and got out the vote much more impressively. So the kind of goodwill that the Irish felt they had, it didn't count for much in the end.
Yeah, so give us a flavour of who voted for France then in that initial first vote.
Yeah, you're talking Italy, Scotland, which these are all kind of what we're surmising and have been trying to work out over the course of the day. But Italy, Scotland, and as these federations, kind of the Oceania, the African vote went the French way, apparently, which is quite a slap in the face for South Africa. The European vote may have been split in two, so they gave one vote to Ireland and one vote to France. While South Africa kind of got the three big Southern Hemisphere ones, and Wales, they were kind of they didn't have the groundswell of support from those kind of the places with two votes each that kind of got the French kind of into the box seat. The fact that they won the first vote, I think everyone is expecting South Africa to win the first vote and knock out the 20, and then the Irish and French vote to kind of combine to take them out in the end. But the fact that France got 18 on the first count, and then England went France's way on the second count, because South Africa only put on two votes between round one and two, which means that three English votes must have gone to France. So that's a bit of a slap in the face for the South Africans too. So Like there was blood on the floor in the boardroom. I mean, you should have seen the ashen faces of the five World Rugby representatives when they came out to the press conference. This was not a good result for their process. Not a good result for Bill Beaumont and those guys. It was pretty grim for them, and you know, they had to come out and rebuke Laporte 2 weeks ago, and now they're you know, toasting with him with champagne and saying how they kept talking about how transparent the process was, but unfortunately it didn't turn out to be that way.
In better news, Keith, a Joe Schmidt Irish team, when everything's in working order, will grind down your spirit to nothingness. They will do the basics so well and so relentlessly that you will just want to never play them again. And we kind of saw that in full flow on Saturday. 32 points to 15 was the previous record, and Ireland better that by 18 points against a very sorry South African team, admittedly.
Yeah, they were. And it was funny watching the game and, you know, watching it then afterwards and looking at the comments that came out from it. I thought South Africa reminded me a little bit about Munster a few years ago when Rob Penny started, when he tried to move the ball across the back line without injecting any pace and without having a master game maker at 10, which he was used to in New Zealand, that it requires maybe two players to be able to unlock the opposition perfectly and everybody else is able to function into it. But it looked like a team who was just starting to do it, because South Africa had the ball. They went over and back across the field. Elton Yanchis was very deep, which meant he was never a threat to anybody. He passed the ball. They all passed it very nicely. It was all behind the gain line, and somebody trucked it up, and Ireland made tackles and spread out their defensive line again, and Ireland were never attacked around the edge. And it just, they didn't fire a shot for the whole game. And I thought in many respects there was a stultifying sense of defence. You know, the manner in which Ireland were under zero pressure, yeah, virtually for the whole game. That was the game. And I think Ireland would have liked to have taken a couple of chances earlier on and would like to have had a scoreline stronger earlier in the game, because they took away and scored the tries in the last 10 minutes. But Ireland looked comfortable for the whole game. Mm. And it was incredibly clinical. Every player that came into the system played properly and as if they had always been playing it, which means that it's fairly intense and fairly accurate from Joe Schmidt, but the players were able to pick it up pretty quickly.
Yeah. Best aspects for you, Rory, best performers?
Best performers, I mean, you couldn't help but being impressed by the kind of two new faces in the back line. I mean, I think there's a lot more to come from Bundi Aki with ball in hand, but I mean, to set the tone in the first minute by taking out the opposition's tight head was just something special. You know, that's exactly what his teammates are going to respond to. And then Jacob Stockdale was still doing it in the 76 minutes, and then, you know, racing clear a few minutes later for his own try. I thought, you know, it was very, I was going to, you know, player ratings for what they're worth at the weekend, and like you're kind of struggling to differentiate themselves from each other, because it was such an excellent team performance. I thought, you know, there was a couple of glitches with the attacking game, but tactically Ireland were just so spot on. It was a reminder of how good Joe Schmidt can be when he's had time and to kind of put a lot of thought into a game plan for a specific opponent. You know, the back row was strong. The, you know, Sexton and Murray were world class. They were so much better than Cronje and Yanchis. You know, they didn't look like they were playing the same sport at the time. So, look, Ireland, I think, just went after South Africa's, the strengths that South Africa brought to the New Zealand game. They kind of, you know, their rush defence was sensational at times. It just never allowed them in. And you're right, they sucked the life out of South Africa, who didn't want to be there for the last 10 minutes. And then Ireland put a gloss on it. It hadn't been particularly pretty up until that point. But Ireland were able to run in those tries, and to see so many of the young guns and the subs combined for that final try was just really impressive. You know, Dave Kilcoyne pulling a pass back, James Ryan pushing the ball, you know, taking the ball on hard on his first big game in charge. You know, it was just, it all came together. Sweetland picking the ball off his bootlaces like he'd been around forever. You know, it just looked really, really impressive, and I think Ireland are in a pretty good place for the season.
Yeah, Aki's sudden emergence, obviously, gives Joe Schmidt a very nice headache for centre. And we had Eddie O'Sullivan and Brian O'Driscoll on the show on Monday, and they were just teasing out the options we suddenly have at centre. And as you'll hear, Brian makes the point at fullback.
The problem, I suppose, looking at the Leinster side of it is, if Harry Ringrose comes back, does he go back to 12 now? And, you know, how does that dynamics work?
I wonder, does he go back to 15?
Yeah.
You know? He was a great 15. He's a great kicking game.
But he's played all through his career at 15.
You know, he started as a
15.
Very, very capable in the air. We've seen him. We saw that try he scored against England a few seasons ago, dominating the air. So I wonder if you have a full deck, do you get him in there? Because it gives him an opportunity to play with ball in hand a little bit more.
That is, like, to play a test rugby consistently in one position, you probably should play there most weeks with your club. Unless you're super talented, yeah.
But he's pretty talented.
It's a massive ask to ask a guy to suddenly go from one position to another, like if he's playing his club rugby consistently. Because there's nuances at test level that you need to be grappling with every week in your day-to-day to be comfortable on the ball. So, no doubt he's that ability.
You can be sure that they're a bit frustrated that Joey Carberry's playing 15 for Leinster because he's the
backup 10.
Number 10. Totally. So they want him getting game time. So to that point, he's going to be Leinster's number 12. He's not going to be playing 15 for them.
Yeah.
But I just wonder, with the calibre, and, you know, there's some question marks about Rob Kearney. I thought he was reasonably good. He wasn't at his best.
Yeah.
But I think we need to try and put maximum pressure in multiple positions. And at the moment, Rob doesn't, with Zeebo out of the equation, he doesn't have a huge amount of pressure on him.
Yeah.
And I think that'll bring more out of him if you get him and maybe Jarrod Payne in there as well, and all fighting for one position.
There is a vacuum behind Rob in the pecking order as to who is the next, with Zeebo at the loop, who's the next fullback in there. If Rob kind of went down the warm up, who'd be the guy you'd bring in? And there's question marks there. Joey Carberry could go in there. Robbie Henshaw is a really good suggestion.
So there you go, Keith. You've Ringrose coming back. You've Aki, who has started off very well. You've got Jarrod Payne, who's not getting much of a mention. And Brian is making the point Henshaw could play 12 for Leinster, could do a job for Ireland at 15 as a way of getting Aki, Ringrose, Henshaw all on the pitch. That's a complicated little swirl of names for Joe Schmidt to sort out.
It is, and one thing we'll say is they'll probably never all be fit at once.
Yeah,
that's the nature of it. I still am a fan of Carberry at 15, and even though the consistent chat is that he's back up to 10, which is perfect, which is fine, and he's still very young and still only getting used to everything that he's doing. But I think the route, the Beauden Barrett route of being into shake things up at different times, you know, when he was a younger player coming in. And I still do say that, no, we didn't need it last weekend, but I still feel that Johnny Sexton plays better when he's got a attacking playmaker at 15. I think it takes some of the pressure off him, and so I like that. And actually, that's one person we didn't mention. Johnny Sexton has come back from the Lions. I don't know whether he's smiling enough, but he was pretty miserable last year when he was playing. He doesn't look like he's miserable this year. He looks like he is strutting his stuff, whether getting the Lions and maybe, you know, getting the result that they got down there off his back to some degree, with the idea that he is able to mix it with the absolute best on a world stage and come out of it shining, which I think he did in the Lions. I just think maybe he's at the age where he's just really willing to have a go, where the balance of everything is right for him. He would look confident, but he didn't look angry confident. He looked in control, and it was quite a pleasure to watch.
Yeah. Fiji at the weekend then, Rory. The reality is that this November International Series just does feel a good deal flatter than the fun of last year, and we've got supposedly the biggest scalp taken care of. So what do we look for from Fiji?
Well, I spoke to Conor O'Shea today for a piece of dinner Saturday, and his Italy team beat Fiji comfortably last weekend, and he was predicting something similar or probably more comfortable for Ireland this weekend. He did say they're probably a different proposition from the one that Ireland would have faced in previous years. You know, that we kind of expect them to come around all singing, all dancing, and they're probably better up front than they used to be, and their tight five is quite good, and I think they'll give Ireland a game. They ran Australia close in the summer. I think that defeat to Italy was their first defeat since, but you would expect Ireland to win the game, even though Joe Smith appears to be looking to make a lot of changes to his team. It looks like he's only going to retain three or four of the team from last weekend. You're right, look, it's not a glamorous schedule this year. Argentina are in the doldrums as well. Their game against England was terrible last weekend.
So you're not getting the same highs that we got last year. And even the fact that South Africa were either bad or made to look bad last weekend takes away some of the kind of enjoyment from us. But if he is able to guess game time into kind of 12, 13 kind of fresh faces from last week on the back of a record win, and then kind of rotate again into the Argentina week, I think Joe Schmidt will be pretty happy with the job of work that he'll have put together going into a Six Nations where the express aim appears to be to get the title back.
Yeah, it strikes me as a very difficult scenario for any player coming in, Keith. No player likes coming in when there's wholesale changes made, because it's not like you can just slot into a well-working unit. I appreciate Schmidt teams are all well-working units, everybody in the squad's on top of the game plan, but there's also an added pressure to cut loose and put on a bit of a show.
There's a bit of that, but I can tell you that still, for any guy, doesn't matter how many caps he has, you're playing for your country. You have to play with pride. You have to deliver for the jersey by the end of it. You can't ever let those stray thoughts going in, well, I could play the best game of my life and not get another cap in this year. You can't think that way. You just have to go out and play as professionally as you possibly can and treat Fiji with the respect they deserve and try and put a big number on them. You know, it's for other people to think about. You're the hiding to nothing. You have to go out and just play and perform. For some of the younger guys, this is might be their first chance to play, might be in the first five or six caps that they play. They need the exposure on an international field. They need to be in the Aviva. I don't know, is it sold out, Joe? I'm not sure. Yeah, which is brilliant. And I think what tends to happen for an awful lot of these games is there tends to be more kids in the crowd for the, we'll say, the lesser game, without being disrespectful. And that leads to a slightly different atmosphere, which is a good thing. And, you know, I just, when you get the chance or the opportunity to put on the jersey, you just want to, you want to love it and you want to relish it and kind of let all the other thoughts that go, and they happen in the press and the media and us, of course, and we're all part of it, where we watch a huge number of rugby all the time, but never take away the fact that it's really important for a young guy to put on an Ireland jersey.
Yeah, it's a fair point. We'll talk next week. Rory, safe home. Keith, thanks a million.
Off the ball.
On News Talk. In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.